It's Sunday, the 24th of January, 2016. Happy birthday to Mark Eaton. To the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Monster Podcast, brought to you by Moneyball.com.au and The Boogie Blues. My name is Josh Lloyd, and if you want to sponsor the podcast like The Boogie Blues, all you need to do is leave a review on iTunes, and you can be the naming sponsor of a podcast for one day. It's very straightforward, and not only do you get to sponsor a podcast, but yeah, you have my undying thanks as well. Also, of course, a big shout out to Moneyball, Australia's best daily fantasy sports site. Get involved with Moneyball if you are in Australia or New Zealand. I am pretty positive you will not regret the experience. All right, we have got 8 games from Saturday to talk about. We've got 4 games from Sunday to have a look at. There's a lot to talk about, so
let's get to it.
The monstrous line of the night.
The monstrous line of the night is Damian Lillard of the Portland Trailblazers. He had a pretty favorable matchup, I think that's fair to say, hitting against the Los Angeles Lakers. He only needed to play 29 minutes to become the monstrous line of the night. He had 36 points, including 5 triples. He had 1 rebound and 5 assists. And you might look at that and go, that's sort of monstrous, but it's not fantastic. But where he really comes in is he went 14 of 19 from the field. Now, you go 14 of 19 from the field, the impact that has, it's the equivalent of someone scoring 70 points. Now, I know that sounds dumb, but if you're on Basketball Monster, go and have a look at the Z scores for the game. He scored 36 points. It gave him a Z score of 4.43, which a Z score, if you're not sure what it is, it gives value relative to the other scores on the day. So it's basically 4.43 standard deviations above the mean, which is incredible. Lillard's field goal percentage was 10.05 and a Z score. That's 10 standard deviations above the mean. It's incredibly, incredibly impactful. That sort of thing makes up for, you know, horrible shooting nights from, say, Ricky Rubio or Kobe Bryant. I'm trying to say someone who had a bad game. Jordan Clarkson, for example, had a bad game shooting. He went 2 of 8. He was a negative 3.25. Put him and Lillard together, you're still a positive 7 in Z score, and you know, a huge benefit to your team. That's how impactful he was in that field goal percentage category. So yes, the raw numbers weren't there in terms of the overall volume of, you know, look at Boogie Cousins, who was second. Actually, when I looked at my monstrous line of the night rankings, he was second. But that massive impact that he had in the field goal percentage was huge. And it could have, you know, that over a course of a week, that could have, you know, caused your team to rise to maybe even 3% over the week. And that can be, even if it's 0.5%, that's enough to change a category from a loss to a win just on that one performance from Damian Lillard. It hasn't been his strength this season, shooting, definitely not. He's only a 42% guy over the course of the year, but his last 2 weeks, he's up at 48%, really improving that efficiency. The other numbers are there. He's still hitting over 3 threes a game. He's taken his assists to 7 a game. 4 boards. You really want more steals out of him. That's been a little bit disappointing, only at 0.7, but that's never been a strength of his. Otherwise, you're loving the scoring. You're loving the increased efficiency, the threes. The free throw percentage has been, you know, stellar this season at 8.7. The other benefit from Lillard today, not one single turnover, and that's obviously beneficial if you're playing in a 9 category league.
The waiver wire line of the night.
Tyson Chandler of the Phoenix Suns. He's owned in less than 60% of leagues. He played 44 minutes and had 13 points, but 27 rebounds, which is obviously huge. 5 assists, 1 steal, 2 blocks, 3 of 10 from the field, which is very un-Tyson Chandler-ish. More than likely, you'd expect him to go 7 of 10 from the field, and he went 7 of 10 from the free throw line. So big, big numbers from Chandler, and his numbers lately have been incredible. His last 4 games, he's averaging 17 rebounds. Now, he's not doing much more than that. A block a game in that time, 8 points, half a steal, a ridiculously low 38% from the field in his last week, and only 48% on the season. But the rebounding numbers are huge. He's playing big minutes at the moment. We don't know what's going to happen. Nobody knows. Jeff Hornacek doesn't know what's happening with Phoenix with the rotation. There's still stacks of guys out. Still no John Lewis. Still no Markieff Morris. Mizic Ledovic was back, but the Suns went and ran. Yeah, Tyson Chandler and Alex Len as the front court, and they got another win. That's two in a row. And, you know, I've always liked Alex Len and wished that he would get more minutes. But at the moment, we'll talk about Len a little bit later. I think you have to, especially if you're really looking for big man numbers, you're looking for some blocks, you're looking for bulk rebounds, yeah, Chandler has to be picked up. It might not last long because, he was terrible for big stretches of this season. But for now, you have to go and add him and say, you know what, I'm getting 15 rebounds out of this guy a night. And where are you finding that anywhere else? The answer is you're not. It might drop off. He might go back to 20 minutes. Hornacek might decide we're going to run really small and play spuds like Lua at center, which is not a great idea. Chandler wasn't a great idea early in the season either. I think, obviously, Len is the best option there. But Chandler's going to get these minutes. He's going to put up rebounds. And for now, you own him. It might change in a week. Who knows what Phoenix is doing? They've clearly still got no idea what they're actually running with their rotation. But this has been successful for the last couple of games. And I would assume that Hornacek is still going to run with it. And that means that it's valuable to you as a fantasy owner, as someone that you want to grab to get those big, big bulk numbers, as you do with the rebounding with Tyson Chandler.
Young Gun of the Night.
The Young Gun of the Night is Nikola Jokic of the Denver Nuggets. Jokic started and played 32 minutes in this one because Kenneth Faried was out and Yusuf Nurkic, another DNP CD. So they gave big minutes to Jokic and he responded fantastically. 17-5-3. He hit a triple. He had two steals. He had three blocks. His talent hasn't been in question. He's someone who I've been very excited about this season. He's a top 50 player over the last 2 weeks in 21 minutes. He's top 95 in the last 2 months in 20 minutes. I think you have to own him. He's shooting an incredible percentage from the field. He's at, from the field, yes, 56.5% the last 2 weeks, but 94 from the free throw line? That's amazing. He can do a lot. He can get assists, steals, blocks, threes, points, rebounds, and percentages. He's a true contributor, or he can be a true contributor in every category. If he was to get 30 minutes a night, there's no doubt in my mind he's a top 100 player. There's no doubt in my mind he's a top 75 player. But there is Joffrey Lavernier there who is below him in terms of his ability, and Jokic should get more minutes than him. And then there's Yusuf Nurkic, who at this point, it's really hard to continue to own Nurkic. If I own Nurkic, I'm swapping him for Jokic. I don't know how the system or the situation is going to play out. But for now, Jokic, even in limited minutes, much like when we talked to Manu Ginobili yesterday, even in 20 minutes, they're putting up top 100 numbers. He's doing it in 20 minutes as well. And at least he's got an upside where maybe he puts a 25-minute role, a 26-minute role. Mike Malone has been effusive with his praise for this guy over the course of the season, throughout preseason as well. He looked impressive in summer league. He can do basically anything on the court and looks really fantastic, to be honest. He should be owned in pretty much most leagues, but yeah, there's going to be times when he gets misplayed by Malone, and the most glaring example of that is when they play Lavernier over him. Lavernier is an inferior player to Jokic, and if you have trust in ability, in a player's ability, you hold Jokic even through a couple of the lean stretches. Sometimes it looks like, oh, they're not going to do anything with him. They're going to play him 13 minutes and it's going to piss you off. But his talent is undeniable. What he can do is undeniable when he gets the minutes. For now, he's a great guy to go and add and see where it runs, because some pretty impressive form from him of late. Definitely some impressive numbers.
Dud of the Night.
Zach Randolph of the Memphis Grizzlies was not good. He played just 22 minutes in a start for the Grizzlies. 7 points, 6 rebounds, 1 assist, subpar percentages. No steals, no blocks, no threes, which is pretty par for the course for him. 3 of 9 for the field for Zach Randolph. He has been disappointing this season, it's fair to say. His last 2 weeks have got him ranked outside the top 130. He's still a top 120 player on the season. He's by no means a must-own player. He looked like he was trending back up to a 28-29-minute role. That has dropped off over the last week or so, back to a 24-25-minute role. And in that sort of minutes, he's not worth holding on to in standard leagues. And you get the feeling that maybe this is the time where he transitions into a bench player and doesn't, become that not even 20 and 10 guy, 15 and 8 guy or anything like that. I just don't think that he becomes that guy anymore. He's a guy that I had early in the season. I dropped him. Yes, he had a bit of a bounce back, but I didn't regret it. And he's definitely not in the greatest of form at the moment.
Perfect DFS lineup.
The perfect lineup for Saturday's action would have totaled you 400 points. If you had Ricky Rubio at point guard, you would have been pretty happy. 45.2 points for Rubio. Not a bad night there at all as he took on the Grizzlies. It wasn't really a favorable matchup for him given the way the Grizzlies have defended the point guard spot, but he was great. His shot didn't really matter in terms of what he does in DFS. A big night from Rubio. And Archie Goodwin, who is a guy that I think should be owned in pretty much all leagues at the moment. He has played two starts in place of Brandon Knight. He put up 35.2. He should be owned in all standard leagues, and he remains a great DFS option. There's a big chance that we don't see Brandon Knight for a significant chunk of time here as he deals with his groin issue. The Suns aren't going anywhere. They want to see what they've got from Goodwin. I really liked Goodwin from a long time. I actually had sort of given up on him at the start of this season. But he's coming through now. They don't have anyone that's going to challenge him for minutes. He's a guy that could easily be a top 100 guy from here until at least when Brandon Knight comes back. And who knows when that's going to be. That could take a while for him to get back into action. At shooting guards, J.R. Smith at 34.7, Gary Harris at 29.8. It's always about the cheaper players at shooting guard most. Sometimes you'll get a big one there from James Harden or Jimmy Butler. But a lot of the time, it's just finding a guy who can get you 30 points at a cheap salary. And that's what these guys both did, Harris and J.R. Smith. Harris has been threatening most of the season. He's been a guy that maybe I've been a little bit excited about. Probably unjustifiably so. But he came through here. The minutes have been really consistent with him. And that's something where when you look at tournament plays and go, this guy's going to get 30 minutes. He's going to get 35 minutes most times. And that sort of consistent playing time means that at some stage, something's going to hit big. And he hit big enough. Yeah, 30 points is not huge, but when you're paying $4,500, it's pretty impressive. We're talking 6 or 7x value for Gary Harris. At small forward, LeBron James, he always kills the Bulls. He did it again, 60.1 points. Cavs lost, but LeBron killed, so that was important there. And Danilo Gallinari with another 43.2. His salary was relatively appealing. He'd been a little bit down on form, so he was an interesting bounce back guy. The power forwards almost picked themselves. Anthony Davis 46.9 and Pau Gasol at 48. Both those guys, you looked for Pau to have a pretty big bounce back. I thought he would be a decent guy to look at. And Davis at 46.9, the matchup was really nice for him. And at center, Tyson Chandler 56.9. He was a guy that I didn't really want to trust in a cash game, but in a tournament at his lower salary, and assuming that those guys were going to be out like Morris and like Lua, which they all were, you knew that they were going to have to force him into pretty big minutes, and that's exactly what happened. And Tyson Chandler rounded out that perfect lineup. Break it down!
Box score breakdown!
All right, let's get into these games now and look at them in a little bit more detail. They said there were a couple of postponed games due to the blizzard. And again, hopefully everyone is okay who's living on the east coast of the States. The first game we're going to take a look at, the Milwaukee Bucks and the New Orleans Pelicans. Another good game from Michael Carter. Well, not another because he's had a little bit of a down patch, but a big game here from Carter Williams. 33 minutes, 19, 4, and 5, 2 steals and 2 blocks. And when you get 9 of 12 shooting from him, it's a bonus. You own him for the other peripheral stats, and he was great at it there. Only 30 minutes for Greg Monroe, but 22 and 11 and a block is still doing enough. You just wish he'd play 34 minutes, but they're continually just giving those extra minutes to John Henson, who only played the 15 here, so a couple short, and didn't get a block, so that obviously means he provided nothing for your fantasy team. Giannis, only the 28 minutes for him. He fouled out, so 10, 6, and 2 with a steal and a block. Not a bad performance in the limited minutes. While Chris Middleton, again, incredible. 22, 7, and 5 with 4 triples. This guy continues to be amazing. I'd love to see him in the All-Star game. It's not going to happen. There is zero chance of Chris Middleton being in the All-Star game, but he has been that good this season. And Jabari Parker, again, the minutes are right there. 34, not his greatest night. 10, 5, and 3 with a block. But you like getting a block from him. I highlighted him quite a bit in yesterday's show. He needs to be owned in basically all leagues at the moment. Jared Bayless, only the 21 minutes there for him, while Rashad Vaughn got 21 with OJ Mayo sitting out. Bayless had 3 points, no assists. Not really a must-own 12-team league guy. On to the Pelicans. Good to see that Drew Holiday only played 25 minutes. He was still really productive, though. 13, 4, and 9 with 3 steals and a 3. Let's go through the players who played similar minutes to Holiday. It wouldn't mean they played too many more, but Tony Douglas played 24, which is ridiculous that he would play more than Holiday. 14, 1, and 4 with 4 triples and 3 steals. Norris Cole played 27, and he went 11, 3, and 3 with 4 of 10 shooting. He did hit 3 triples, Cole. You can own him in a 12-team league. I won't be. He's a worst player on your roster sort of player with not a huge amount of upside. Tyreke Evans really struggled. He was 3 of 12 for 10 points in only 24 minutes. He was just ineffective in this game. He had 6 assists and a steal. I don't think he's still right from his knee issue. Ryan Anderson, 6 triples, which is obviously really good. 23 points with 6 rebounds. Not a great shooting night. 8 of 20 for Anderson. Anthony Davis really filled the stat sheet here. 22, 7 and 5, 1 3, 1 steal, 4 blocks. Bit of a subpar percentage game for Davis, but still a relatively impressive night for him. In case you're wondering, Omer Asik was still terrible. 4 points and 8 rebounds in 19 minutes for him. And the other spuds on this team, Dante Cunningham didn't play. So that opened up some minutes on the wings. And Alonzo G played 35 minutes. That is way too many minutes for Alonzo G. 12 and 6 with 3 assists and a steal. But the Pelicans, they're rolling at the moment. A huge win, 17-point win for them. Still question a lot of the things that Gentry does, but they're in a fairly sort of easy stretch of their schedule and put up some pretty nice numbers. So well done to the Pelicans. The next game, the New York Knicks and the Charlotte Hornets. Kristaps Porzingis played 30 minutes, 13 and 4, 2 threes, and had 3 blocks, so that sort of salvaged his value there. Just a nice, solid game, nothing too spectacular. Mello, only 29 minutes for Mello, 9 and 6 with 2 assists, knee soreness. Definitely not something you want to hear. We know what happened with him with his knee last season. Let's keep our fingers crossed as a Mello owner that this is not a flare-up of what happened to him last year, that he's not going to have to miss time with this, because it's not a good sign when a guy had such a long recovery from his knee surgery last year. We're talking like January through September, which should have been November through to July, but Mello had to start in the All-Star game because that's ridiculous. Just one other thing on Mello. The fact that he is on the court and he takes technical free throws ahead of Jose Calderon is ludicrous. Calderon is potentially the greatest free throw shooter of all time. That's maybe hyperbolic, but he's in the conversation, and Mello takes the techs over Jose? Ludicrous. Ridiculously selfish from Mello. The coaches should be, Derek Fisher should be saying, Mello, you're not taking it. What are you doing? Calderon takes the free throws. I don't care who you are. I don't care that you're the face of this team. If you're hitting 75% of your free throws and this guy's hitting 95, you don't take him. Very, very straightforward. Anyway, Mello owners, be a little bit worried. It's not panic mode. It's not sell low. It's not anything like that just yet. But let's see what news comes out. And if we hear anything, or if he puts up a monster game in the next one, maybe try and sell at a decent price there. Robin Lopez, only the 20 minutes in this game, which always phases me as to there's some games why he just won't play 25, 28 minutes. 20 minutes, 10 and 8 with 2 blocks. They're still relatively productive. Aaron Aflalo, 10, 4, and 2, and actually helped in other areas. 2 threes, a steal, and a block. While Jose Calderon, the aforementioned Jose Calderon, only the 6 points, but 4 rebounds, 7 assists, and a steal. You know that I still like him as a guy who is who's giving value because of his ability to get assists. Now, Jerian Grant had a big game yesterday. Not so much here. 9 minutes, missed all 6 of his shots, and had 1 rebound and 1 assist. He's not someone to add at this point, but as I mentioned yesterday, he's definitely someone I'm keeping an eye on. With Lance Thomas out, with Carmelo Anthony hurting, Derek Williams was huge. 19 and 14, he hit a 3, he had 4 assists and a steal. He also, if for some reason you happen to own him, destroyed your percentages, 5 of 16 and 8 of 14 from the line. But if Melo misses time, Williams is going to be the guy to add, because we've seen earlier on when Thomas has been out and when Melo's been out, Williams has put up big numbers, and he did it again tonight, so he's a guy to watch. He's not a speculative ad or anything like that. He's a deep league guy only, but he's someone to definitely keep an eye on and see exactly what goes down with this Mello situation. With the Hornets, there was no Jeremy Lamb. Cody Zeller is now out at least a week, and Nick Batum was out of this one. So we saw some big nights from a few players. Jeremy Lin at 40 minutes, 26, 5, and 5, 2 threes and a block. A lot of people don't think that Jeremy Lin should be owned. I think he should be owned in pretty much all leagues. He's getting a pretty significant role. He fits more on a punt field goal percentage sort of team. If you're not punting field goal percentage, maybe he's not doing enough to be owned in that sort of situation. But if you are, we're talking about a guy who does have quite a bit of value. He's not doing massive amounts, but I think he's doing enough to be owned in majority of leagues. PJ Hairston had probably his best game. 34 minutes he played, 20 and 10, 2 threes, 2 steals, and that's great. But Steve Clifford seems allergic to playing him more than 20 minutes. For some reason, he got 34 here and excelled. With Lamb out and Batum out, and he got that extra run. They didn't give it to Troy Daniels this time. I'm not believing that Hairston's going to be a guy that we need to pay real close attention to. Spencer Hawes started. He played 34 minutes, had 2 points, but 10 rebounds, 2 steals, and a block is pretty impressive. And Frank Kaminsky, for some reason, with Zeller out, Kaminsky's now playing less. This always makes no sense to me. If Kaminsky's getting 30 minutes a night, 30 minutes a night, 30 minutes a night, 30 minutes a night, and the guy in front of him gets injured and he plays 17. It happens so often in the NBA that it just doesn't make sense to me. Like, yes, they put Hawes in as a starting spot, but surely Kaminsky's role of what he was doing before Zeller went out is unchanged. Why is he playing less minutes now when there's one less guy in the front court? I don't really understand what's happening. Spencer Hawes, I said, the 34 minutes, he's a short-term guy for the next week with Zeller out. I think you'd prefer him over Kaminsky because obviously the minutes are going in his direction at the moment. Kaminsky's probably a drop in a 12-team league if you were hoping he was going to benefit from the Zeller injury. It hasn't happened in the two games so far. Marvin Williams had 12 rebounds. He did nothing else. 4 points, no other stats, and terrible percentages. He's no longer a must-own player. And Kemba Walker goes 26-6-5 with 3 triples, a steal, and a block. It's a quiet night from Kemba. He also was terrible from the field, 7 of 25, hit all 9 of his free throws, but still a pretty impressive night from Kemba Walker nonetheless. The Grizzlies and the Timberwolves. The Wolves got the big victory over the Grizzlies here. Marc Gasol played through that knee contusion, only the 32 minutes, so definitely down on what he's been doing. 17 points, not a massive amount else. 2 rebounds only, 1 assist and 1 block, not his greatest night, but he was playing through that knee problem. Mike Conley battled, he hasn't played 30 minutes since he came back from his Achilles. He was battling some foul trouble here. 9, 7, and 6 in 24 minutes. He will get better. He's still a great buy-low target to me. And Mario Chalmers, in an extended role, played 27 minutes. 19, 3, and 5. 2 threes, 2 steals, 1 block. A great Mario Chalmers line. I don't think that he's a 12-team league guy anymore, though. Matt Barnes is 37 minutes, 13, 3, and 5. 3 threes, 1 steal. Big minutes for him, and that's it. Exactly how I like it, because he's the better player out of him, Jeff Green, Courtney Lee, Tony Allen. He's the best player out of that quartet of guys and should be getting the most minutes, and he's clearly the most fantasy-friendly. Courtney Lee had 8 points. We can leave him alone. Jeff Green went 11, 2, and 3 in 27 minutes. And Ryan Hollins, who was recently signed to another 10-day deal, you can leave him alone. 20 minutes, 5 and 2 with an assist and a steal. He'll just be a stream guy if maybe you want to grab a block or a couple of rebounds in a deeper format. Onto the Wolves, Karl Anthony Towns, 14 and 9, 3 assists, 1 steal, 1 block, hit all 6 of his field goal attempts, hit both of his free throws. A very, very impressive night for Towns. And Ricky Rubio, who I mentioned before, only played 29 minutes to have that big line. 15, 6, and 12 with 3 steals, while Andy Wiggins went 19 and 5, also had a block as well, and went 7 of 10 from the field and hit all 5 of his free throws. So a pretty good night from Wiggins. But the biggest, maybe not surprise, is Shabazz Muhammad really coming on at the moment. 33 minutes for Muhammad, 25 points, he hit a 3. Now, he doesn't do much in the other categories, but you like the fact that he went to the line 8 times and he hit all 8 of them. He went 8 of 15 from the field. You like all of that. You like that he was able to chip in with a 3-pointer. The minutes are rising, but even in these extended minutes, and you look at him over his last 4 games, he's averaging 30 minutes a game. He's almost at 16 points, 6 rebounds, and a 3. But that places him 182nd because he gets no assists. How many assists has he had for the season? 19 assists he's had in 910 minutes. He gets you no assists. Look at his other numbers because they're going to be funny as well. He's had 9 steals in 910 minutes. He's had 4 blocks in 910 minutes. These are not good numbers. He's a 48% field goal shooter, which has actually been down with his minutes going up, 45% over the last 2 weeks in 29 minutes a game. And he's a 77% free throw shooter. So, yeah, it's nice, and you see a guy go out there and put up 25 points and play 35 minutes, because that's great, but it's a bit Aaron Aflalo-ish. There's just not much happening in these other areas that if he got a steal a game, if he got two assists a game, if he got 0.7 blocks, we're talking an easy top 90 guy. But he's doing nothing in the other areas, and it's a concern. So he's not, by any stretch, a real must-add guy. I really like what he's doing, and he is helpful from the Timberwolves' point of view, and he's playing well. But that doesn't always necessarily mean it translates into great fantasy value. Zach LaVine, if you haven't moved on from him, should have done that a week ago, 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago. LaVine went 5-2-4 with 3 steals and a block. And Gorgui Dieng is in that same category. Only 19 minutes for him, 2-6 with a couple of blocks. His only real run at value is going to be if Karl Anthony Towns gets injured. And even then, I get the feeling that Sam Mitchell's going to play Nikola Pekovic over him. Dieng had a nice run in that sort of mid-November, start of December timeframe. It's not happening anymore. He can go in most leagues. Tayshaun Prince, 16 minutes, of course, 6 points, nothing else. And Kevin Garnett, 9 minutes with a sore knee. Nemanja Bjelica played 22, so he's also impacting Gorgui Dieng as well. And if Garnett has to miss any time, we're probably going to see the ludicrous front court combination of Karl Anthony Towns and Nikola Pekovic. But it's not going to mean increased minutes for Dieng. You'll see more for Pekovic, you'll see more for Bjelica. You might see a little bit for Dieng, but it's not going to be enough for him to be justified owned in standard leagues, I wouldn't have thought. The next game is the Chicago Bulls, actually, traveling to Cleveland in the first game post-Blatt, and the Cavs weren't good. The Bulls got the victory, and Pau Gasol bounced back brilliantly. 25-10-6, a triple one for Pau, super efficient as well, and he's been, aside from that terrible game against the Warriors, he's been really good. And Jimmy Butler played 42 minutes, because that's what you do when a guy's feeling sick. He'll play 42, 20-9 with 2 triples, not much else for Jim. Nikola Mirotic, bang. Good game from him. Good. 25 minutes, 17-6, 3 triples, 1 assist, 1 steal. This is why you hold on to him. I like him in a 25-minute role. I'd like him in a 30-minute role. But in a 25-minute role, he's got enough fantasy ability to put up standard league numbers in 25 minutes. Good to see that he's done that over the last couple of games. Playing the minutes, getting some extra stats. Still has to be owned. And Taj Gibson played 29 minutes here. He went 15-8 with 2 blocks. Now, with Gibson playing his usual role, Gasol playing his usual role, Mirotic playing his usual role, Bobby Portis played 9 minutes. And that's the way it's going to be on most nights. 2-2 for Portis. Not worth it. Derrick Rose had 12 points, 4 rebounds, 4 assists on a horrific shooting night of 5 of 21 from the field. Not his greatest night, but he had been playing pretty well up until this one, so I'm not overly concerned. You're always concerned if you own Derrick Rose, but I'm not overly worried that he's going to be this horrible every single night, because he had been playing pretty well. LeBron James, 26-13-9, 2 steals and a block. A really terrible shooting night from LeBron, 11 of 27 and 4 of 7 from the free throw line, but the counting stats are obviously lovely. And J.R. Smith had a sort of unexpected double-double, 18-11 in 39 minutes with a couple of threes, chimed in a block as well. So that's 2 big games now in a row for J.R. He'll probably go and have 2 or 3 bad ones in a row and then come back and have a couple of good ones. You probably want to own him, I would think. Now, with the change in coaching, Matthew Dellavedova still played 23 minutes. Mo Williams got back into the rotation and played 3. Timofey Mozgov played 21. Tristan Thompson played 22. Not much change is what I'm trying to get at. The minutes were sort of the same for basically everyone. Kyrie went 11-3-3 with 2 steals and a block in his 31. Love went 14-5 in 33 minutes. Everyone played a very similar role. So the thoughts on all these guys sort of remains the same. No for Mozgov in a 12. Same with Thompson in a 12. J.R. Smith, yes, and obviously Irving, Love, and James are going to be playing a very similar role. Things might change as Tyronn Lue gets a little bit more accustomed to having the head job, and we'll see how it goes. But for now, didn't look like a huge amount change to me. The Atlanta Hawks and the Phoenix Suns, Paul Millsap was out of this one, dealing with a grandparent's funeral, so he was out. Tiago Splitter started, only played 17 minutes, 2-3-3, and Al Horford played 39. 9-16-5 for Horford, a steal, 2 blocks. Not his greatest shooting night, but still a relatively impressive performance. Mike Scott got the bulk of the minutes with Millsap out. He played 26 and had 16-4 with a couple of threes, but Millsap's absence isn't going to be long-term, so there's nothing really actionable from any of those guys. What is actionable, though, is this point guard situation. Jeff Teague played 25 minutes, 9-1-3, 2 steals, a block, and a 3, which on the surface is not bad. 4 of 13 shooting's not good, but he doesn't play down the stretch. Dennis Schroeder's closing out the games. Dennis Schroeder looks the better player, to be honest, most of the time. 19-1-5, 2 steals, a block, and 3-3. Schroeder should be owned in every single league. So should Teague. But you get the feeling that The writing is on the wall and that a change is coming. The Hawks are struggling at the moment. Something is going to happen. And I had said it was a 2% chance that T gets traded at the trade deadline. I'm upping that to a 3% chance. I'm going hard. 3% chance Jeff T gets traded at the trade deadline. He's got a super appealing contract. I think they're done with Teague. I get the feeling that they're close to done with him. I don't know. This is complete speculation and gut feel, but it's not looking good for Teague. Now, I still think that if you can buy him extremely low, it's not a bad thing to do. But it's not. He's not getting back to the top 50. I'm very confident in saying that. I don't think there's any chance he gets back to a top 50 guy. Maybe on a new team, but who needs a point guard? Maybe the Rockets? Ooh, hang on. Maybe him on the Rockets. That would be nice, wouldn't it? But he's just not good. He's ranked over the last 2 weeks 217th, 177th over the last month. He's outside the top 100 on the season. He was a guy that I was really sort of hesitant about at the start of the year, and I was going back and forth, and I was like, oh, I don't know what they're going to do with him. They played him less than 29 minutes for the last 3 months of last season. And then I was like, okay, that's because they were good and they were resting players and they were limiting his minutes. But maybe it's just because they don't like him. I don't know. I don't know what it is. I should have been probably more aggressively down on him at the start of the season, because you saw what happened throughout the end of last season, and it's carried over way more this year. He's just really struggling. He could turn it around easily, but it's not promising. Kent Bazemore played 30 minutes, 21-6 with 3 triples, not much else, while Thabo added 7 boards and 3 steals, and Kyle Korver chimed in with 3 threes, 11 points, 5 rebounds, 3 assists, and 2 blocks. That's a pretty nice Kyle Korver sort of line. Onto the Suns, Archie Goodwin. He played 41 minutes, 21 points, 4 assists, 2 steals, 2 blocks, 2 threes. A nice Richie Beno to go along with his 24 points. He's not going to help you in the field goal percentage category. I think that's pretty clear. He was 7 of 17 in this one. Put up not great shooting numbers. He's 35% across the last 2 weeks. But you're in a punt field goal percentage situation. I think that you've got to go and add him. We don't know what's happening with Brandon Knight. It is not looking promising to me at all that he is going to miss extended period of time. I think the Goodwin has to be... Who else is playing? Lorenzo Brown? Sonny Weems? Please. They're not getting minutes now. Goodwin is going to be the guy. And it's good to see him getting this extra role. And I think you have to own him. Alex Len is another guy that we don't know how it's going to play out, but he is good. I know he's good. I wish that he had just a bigger role consistently. He played 35 minutes at power forward, 16, 12, and 5. He was a guy that I speculated upon in the offseason. Can he play next to Chandler? In the end, I said probably not, and most people agreed with me, but he's looked okay next to him these last 2 games. I think you got to own Alex Len as well and see what plays out. It's not like John Lua, Markieff Morris, and Mirza Teletovic are some superstars that are going to come back and storm back and take this power forward job away from Alex Len. John Lua's a journeyman. Markieff Morris is hated in the organization. Mirza Teletovic, whatever. He's a bench guy who gets hot and shoots threes. These aren't guys who are powerhouses at the position. So Len, own him. See what happens. You also have to own PJ Tucker, who played 39 minutes coming back from that sternum contusion. 16-6, 3 triples, a steal, and a block. Big night from PJ Tucker. You don't have to own TJ Warren. 16 minutes with 6 points. He'll have the occasional good game. But overall, it's just not happening for him. And Devin Booker played 36 minutes. His role is secure. He should be owned. Wasn't his greatest night, though. 6 of 19 with 15 points and 3 triples. Added a couple of steals. Not a good shooting night from Booker. And that's something that he's been really valuable with. But even with the way he's been playing, so his last 2 weeks, he's playing 33 minutes a night. He's outside the top 150. And that's averaging 18 points because there's just no rebounds, assists, steals, or blocks from him. And if his field goal percentage is not sitting at 48 or so, when it's at 46, which is still good, it's still not a real positive influence. So, yes, you own him, but I don't think he's a threat for the top 75 or for the top 50 or anything like that. He's had a pretty good stretch lately, and maybe not including tonight. And just the way his game is at the moment in his career, it's not overly fantasy friendly at this stage. The Detroit Pistons and the Denver Nuggets, the next game. Nuggets, another surprising victory. Marcus Morris, 20 points with 3 triples, 2 rebounds, 2 assists, and a steal on some pretty nice shooting, 7 of 10. A decent game then. And Andre Drummond, 18 minutes for Drummond. He was out of this game due to the hacking strategy. They just didn't play him. And that's a real, real bother for his fantasy value, clearly. It's also a bother just for watching a Pistons game. It's horrific to watch. 4 of 8 for him in 18 minutes with a block and missed all 4 of his free throws. You don't do anything with Andre Drummond. You hope that this is not a league-wide trend because it's embarrassing. And I know there are going to be people just hit your free throws. But you know what's not basketball? Running and tagging a player away from the ball. That's not basketball. It should just be play on. You're not involved in the play. Just keep going. Just stop it. Wave it on. It shouldn't be a foul. And it stops it. Very, very straightforward. The thing that's irritating to me is, okay, they give a foul for contact with the guy up, guys, and taps him on the back, right? How many times when players are running down the court do they bump into each other? They're not called fouls. Why is a little slap on the ass called a foul? The refs have obviously got the ability to look at a situation and see contact and go, that's not a foul because you just bumped into each other. Guys are posting up and they've got their hands all over each other. That's not a foul. Why is it if someone runs up and tags someone on the back, is it a foul? I know the people are going to be at me. It's not, whatever. Those plays aren't basketball as well, and it's embarrassing and it needs to change. Reggie Jackson, not a good shooting night. 4 of 15, 11 points, 2 threes, 8 assists, and 1 steal. And Ersan Ilyasova went 9-9 in his 28 minutes. Brandon Jennings had a pretty decent night, only 18 minutes for him, but 5, 10, and 4 with a 3 and a steal. Still not looking at him in a 12-team league. But what I do like here is Aaron Baines played 30 minutes. He went 13 and 10 in 2 blocks. He was great whenever he replaced Tim Duncan last season for the Spurs. And if Drummond's going to be limited, Baines is someone that you look at. I'm not adding him in 12-team leagues, but in a 16-team league, you absolutely add him. And in a 14-team league, maybe you make a proactive move and think, if teams are going to do this to Drummond and the Pistons are going to react this way, Baines is going to see some more minutes, and he's going to be productive. And that might be a move that maybe helps for a week or two. We'll see. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope had 2 blocks with his 16 points, and Stanley Johnson had 12 and 4 with a couple of threes. On to the Nuggets. Gary Harris, 32 minutes for him, 13, 4, and 2, 5 steals, and a 3. He is a great source of steals. He can hit threes. I think he's going to develop into a really, really nice player. And when you think that the Bulls traded Gary Harris and Yusuf Nurkic to get Doug McDermott, it looks like not a great deal in hindsight. The last 2 weeks, Harris is inside the top 90. He's averaging 13.5 points with 1.5 threes, but he gives you 2 assists, 3.5 rebounds, 1.1 steals, and a really solid free throw percentage of 88%. He's coming up, and I think that he should be owned in all 12-team leagues. Yes, he's only a 127 rank on the season, but he's improving, and he's got a really solid role. Nothing is taking him away from that role. Will Barton has dropped off significantly. Barton only played 19 minutes here, so he's not cutting into Harris. Barton, 7 points, 2 rebounds on 2 of 10 shooting. Is Will Barton a must-own player? In the last month, he's ranked outside the top 120. The last 2 weeks, he's outside the top 150. I think that he has to be owned, but the real Will Barton is definitely starting to show up now. And his play is dropping off. He doesn't have as much trust as what Gary Harris does. And Randy Foy is playing a little bit of a bigger role. You still own Will Barton, but if we head into All-Star break, I'm not going to be shocked if Will Barton's on waiver wires, because the trend is definitely heading in the wrong direction for him. Danilo Gallinari, 30 and 6. He hit a 3, had 2 steals, and went 13 of 16 from the free throw line. So huge volume and a pretty good percentage there. Nice night for him. And Darrell Arthur made the start in place of Kenneth Faried. Only 4 points. 5 rebounds, 3 assists, and 4 steals is nice. Faried is nursing a sore adductor muscle. Arthur, just a 14-team league ad at the moment. Big night from Emmanuel Mudiay, 18, 4, and 4, a triple one, 5 of 6 from the free throw line. So, yeah, helpful there. You love him in a points league. I think he's going to, you know, I don't know if Jameer Nelson comes back, if he takes the role back. I'd be surprised now if Nelson goes back to the starter. Mudiay has looked a lot better these last 2 or 3 games. He's still going to be a real issue in your percentage categories in a similar vein to a Rajon Rondo and Alfred Payton, those sort of players. But the counting stats are going to be pretty impressive. And I reckon we see a really sort of souped up Emmanuel Mudiay once we hit February and those last couple of months of the season. Joffrey Lavernier, 16 minutes for 4 and 4. And Randy Foy had 8 points in his 13 minutes. The Los Angeles Lakers and the Portland Trailblazers is the next game that's up. The Lakers, they continue to be terrible. D'Angelo Russell played a whopping 23 minutes. He played less than Ryan Kelly. He played less than Anthony Brown. He played less than Roy Hibbert. He played less than Lou Williams. Played less than Kobe Bryant. Why? He had 21 points on 8 of 12 shooting. Byron Scott is terrible. 3 rebounds, 2 assists, 1 steal and a 3 for Russell. You have to own him at some point. No, I won't say that. I was going to say at some point Scott has to realize what he's doing, but he won't. Continuing to limit Russell is ludicrous, and play spuds like Kelly over him make no sense. For as much as I do like Anthony Brown, he shouldn't be playing minutes over Russell. Lou Williams shouldn't be playing minutes over Russell. None of this makes sense. Those 7 minutes that Nick Young got, you know who could have got those? D'Angelo Russell. What are you doing? And especially, look, don't say he was playing terrible as well. Look, his shot was red hot. Play him. Let him develop. Ugh. Julius Randle started and played 24 minutes, 11-9 with a block. Just a really stock standard Julius Randle game. 25 minutes for Kobe, 25 minutes for Clarkson. The game was a blowout, clearly. So minutes were spread all over the place. Lou Williams played the most. He went 16 points with 3 assists and 2 triples, and not much else exciting happening with his team, to be honest. And it's going to be a long couple of months for the Lakers unless we see these guys like Russell start to really kick it on. CJ McCollum also feasted on the Lakers. 28-3-3, 4 triples and a steal on some really efficient shooting. And Mason Plumlee had a huge night. 13-8-6, 3 steals in 25 minutes. His passing has really shocked me this season. I saw it in the preseason. I mean, okay, well, this is something that's happening here. But he is averaging in his last 3 games 5.7 assists. He's over 3 a game for the last month. And that is fantastic for a center. He's a top 60 player over the last week. He'd been struggling for big chunks of the season. I think he has to be owned in probably the majority of leagues. Not on your team necessarily. It really depends on how your team's structured. But he is the best big man here on this team. He's better than Vonleh. He's better than Davis. He's better than Myers Leonard. And he's putting up some nice numbers now, looking a little bit more comfortable. Those other guys, Davis, Leonard, Al-Farouq Aminu, just no minutes really happening for them. Davis shouldn't be owned. Leonard probably shouldn't be owned. Al-Farouq Aminu, honestly, is borderline as well. He's just up and down, and for as appealing as what he can do is, it just isn't happening really this year. He's ranked 110th on the season, so you probably look at that and go, yeah, probably should be owned, but I just don't see him getting better. I don't see him having a huge ceiling, so to me, he's marginally expendable. Alan Crabb played 26 and didn't do a huge amount with it. And Noah Vonleh continues to start and actually had not a bad game. 11-6 in 25 minutes with 3 steals, but he hit 5 of 6 shots, and I'm going to attribute all of that to the fact that they played the Lakers. The next game is the Indiana Pacers and the Sacramento Kings. Paul George, a pretty decent night. 34 points with 4 triples, 2 blocks, 4 rebounds, 1 assist. Nice night from PG. George Hill returned. He came off the bench and was somewhat of an odd move. And he had 8 points, 4 assists, and 2 steals. I imagine he'll be back in the starting lineup. He played 33 minutes anyway, so that'll be all fine for him. And there was still no Yan Mahinmi, so the Pacers started a front court of Jordan Allen. No, let's try it again. Jordan Hill and Lavoy Allen. But once again, Miles Turner was the man. 11-6, 1 steal, 5 blocks. Has to be owned everywhere. Not really sure the purpose of giving Jordan Hill 6 minutes. That doesn't make a massive amount of sense. All the big men were dealing with fouls, 5 each to Turner, Allen, and Hill. But you would think that if someone's losing minutes, it's Hill and Allen moving forward and not Miles Turner. Monte Ellis played pretty well in his point guard role, 16-2-7. And Joseph Young, who'd been really good, didn't have as great a night here. 1 of 8 shooting, 2 points, 2 assists, 2 steals in 19 minutes. You think that he's going to keep some sort of a role even when Rod Stuckey comes back, but it's not going to be enough that we need to really care in 12, 14, or probably even 16 team leagues, to be honest. Boogie Cousins, 48 points, a career high, 13 boards. He hit a 3, had 2 assists and a steal, and went 17 of 29 from the field. He was pretty poor from the free throw line, 13 of 20, so that's obviously a bit detrimental if you're not punting free throws, or it's a lot detrimental if you're not punting free throws. And also had 5 turnovers, so that's obviously a concern in that area. But he has been fantastic. He was a guy that I was super high on to start the season. I picked him number 4 in the Red Rock Listener League. Probably in hindsight, somewhat of a mistake. I could have gone with Kevin Durant there, but we did that draft back in early August, and I was still a little bit worried about Durant's foot. Boogie is coming on pretty nicely. He's easily a top 10 player over the last month. It was an odd article that was on ESPN during the week talking about whether Boogie Cousins is still a top 10 player, which threw me off completely. He's a top 10 player. I've got no concerns about him being... And the thing that's dropped him right down is his field goal percentage. No doubt. But it's not like he was a strong field goal percentage guy last year anyway. He was 47%, which is, you know, basically break even. So you weren't counting on him to be, he's my center, he's shooting 55%, he's making up for the other players on my team. You were sort of looking at him and going, okay, he's a center and he's not shooting a good field goal percentage. He's not necessarily a punt guy, and he is 2% lower, which is obviously, you know, marginally impactful, but it's not massively impactful. He's not like he's gone from Tyson Chandler from 65% to 48. He's gone from 47 to 45. It's enough of a drop, but it's not horrible. He's also added in 1.2 triples a game. He's also scoring another 2.5 points a game. And his steals and blocks are a little bit down from last season, as are his assists. And his rebounds are slightly down, but he's still putting up, you know, very, very impressive numbers. And, you know, I'm pretty confident that from here on out, he'll be a top 10 guy. Another Rajon Rondo special, 11, 10, and 10 as a triple-double, as pretty low-end as you can get. Two steals and a block, so you're happy with that. And Willie Cauley-Stein has to be owned. 6 points, but 12 boards, two steals, a block, 34 minutes. It reduces Omri Caspi to this 28 to 30-minute role, 8 and 5 for Caspi. He is not a must-own play if he's in that sort of role. Oddly enough, though, in this one, Rudy Gay didn't play, and Caspi couldn't get the extra minutes, which is a little bit baffling to me. I'd still hold Caspi while Gay remains out, and then I'd make the move from there. Ben McLemore's big game on Friday wasn't enough to get him more than 18 minutes. He's still someone to watch, but he's clearly not someone to own. Really don't understand the point in giving James Anderson 20 minutes when you've got McLemore there, who, yeah, was coming off a pretty decent game, but he's clearly not a George Karl favorite. And Darren Collison had 11 points with 2 threes in 25 minutes. Collison is not a must-own player at this point. All right, it is time for a quick break, and then I'll be back to look at the 4 games from Sunday for DFS. I saw your picture today. Got me thinking about the things that I would say. But I know you're happy now in your someplace far away. Away, away, away. And I can't remember the way you taste, you taste, you taste. I walk down your old street, and I wonder if we'll ever meet again. Without a second glance, you turned your back, my friend. This is the end, the end, the end. And I can't pretend I'm ready to be your friend. So don't go, don't you know my face? Games to look at for Sunday's action, with one of those games that was on Sunday and postponed, the Boston and Philadelphia game, has been rescheduled for Sunday, so we've got the extra game happening there. So,
who's winning the match?
DFS preview.
Cool. The first game is the Dallas Mavericks and the Houston Rockets. There is no spread for this one because there's a couple of injuries we need to look at. It doesn't look like Dwight Howard is going to play for Houston. Patrick Beverley will be back, though. He said he is going to play. And on the Dallas side of things, Zaza Pachulia is questionable with a leg issue. Haven't released whether it's that Achilles that was bothering him the other day or if it's something different. And Dirk's knee has caused him to be listed as questionable as well. So obviously there's some things we need to pay attention to. With Howard likely out, for the Rockets, I think there's a lot of value that we can get from some of these guys. Terrence Jones at 4,700. For as much as I don't like him as a player, he can rack up fantasy stats. He put up 32 in 32 minutes in the last game at 4,700. They're going to have to give him at least 25 minutes, I would have thought. I've got him projected at 30. Josh Smith at 3,900. You have to look at him. He played 21 minutes in his first game just after being traded. He was terrible shooting and just completely filled the rest of the stat sheet. He got 25 DFS points in 21 minutes, at 3,900, it's not all that positive matchup for him. The Dallas does restrict power forwards, but I'm not paying too much attention to that because it's Dirk, and then if he's out, then it's Charlie Villanueva. Like, what is that going to do? Smith is definitely someone to pay attention to here as well, and Clint Capela at 4,900 also is in the mix. Now, His salary is just that bit higher. We're talking $200 higher than Jones and $1,000 higher than Smith, so that makes him a little bit less appealing when they're all probably going to get, you know, similar scoring. Jones probably the more fantasy-friendly player. They're all in play. I think that Trevor Ariza at 5,100, he put up 29 in the last game. When he plays power forward, he can get more rebounds, and that might help him in this game. You know, a little bit of four, a little bit of three. You know, a 22-point average across the last five. He's not a super strong play, but he's not bad to look at. And Patrick Beverley at 4,100, not all that keen on using him. Despite the matchup against Darren, he just hasn't been putting up really big numbers, and he's coming off an ankle problem, so I reckon we leave him alone. On the Maverick side of things, we're talking Rockets bump here. So Darren Williams at 6,200, he's already averaging 32 points across the last three games. If he gets another 32 points here, that's bang on 5X, and yeah, we've got a Rocket bump involved. Patrick Beverley return does hinder him a little bit, but I don't think that's too much of a concern. And Wes Matthews at 5,200, he's in a pretty nice run of form. He's put up 30 in the last game, 27 across the last three. Again, nice little Rockets bump for him. Normally we look at power forwards and see if they're going to get a bump, but Dirk is the guy who is the power forward for Dallas. He's at 7,000, and that's too high for me despite the bump. And then you deal with him having the issue with his knee. Makes me probably want to steer clear, same as Zaza Pachulia at 6,200. Now, if we have Nowitzki out, then Charlie Villanueva, as unpalatable as it is, at 3,700, he put up 26 in the last game with Dirk out. And you know, talk about an easy matchup, it's definitely there for him. The other guy who would be not a dumb play, but Salah Mejri. He played 8 minutes in the last game. When he was forced into big minutes a couple of weeks ago, I think against the Pelicans, he was fantastic. He's at 3,700. Just watch. If Dirk and Zaza are out, Salah Mejri in a tournament at 3,700, if he got 20 points, I wouldn't be shocked. He's had a 29-point game in his last five. I wouldn't be shocked. It feels completely off the wall, but I would be more comfortable running him out there than Dwight Powell at the moment, who, despite absences of other players, hasn't done anything lately, and that shocks me because I do really like him. And JaVale McGee also comes into consideration at 3,800. He's a guy that I think that he can get 20 points if he's in a bigger role. So all of these guys, Villanueva, Mejri, and McGee, have to be looked at if Zaza and Dirk are out. Chandler Parsons is red hot at the moment. He's priced at 6,000, and that's nowhere near enough to stop me rostering him. 37 average across the last three, dropped 38 in the last game. Rockets bump, old team, revenge factor. I look for a big game from Chandler, unless he just absolutely folds and does nothing, but he is in some pretty red hot form at the moment. Jimmy Harden at 10,000, averaging 51. You feel relatively confident that you're going to get close to 45 from Jim in this one. So I think this is not a bad spot to spend up the 10,000 and surround it with some cheap players like a Josh Smith, like a Charlie Villanueva, these sort of players, and put that 10,000 in. Now, I mentioned earlier that a lot of the time in the tournaments, in the perfect lineup, you get cheap shooting guards. I think that putting Jim Harden in today and surrounding it with some big power forwards or cheap power forwards is not a bad ploy. The next game, the Oklahoma City Thunder and the Brooklyn Nets. The Thunder are favored by 13.5. 207.5 is the total. This screams of Westbrook and Durant playing 27 minutes. It might not happen, but there's a massive risk of playing these guys. Durant, you maybe look at and think he's at 10,000. Maybe he still gives you 40 points, but and there's seriously no other high-priced small forwards on the board, but I'll just avoid it. I'll just not go with Durant. I wouldn't go with Westbrook. It's tantalizingly good, but they could be tantalizingly sitting on their ass by halfway through the third quarter and not getting back up. That means that guys like Campaign at 3,700, a great tournament play. What a super matchup for him. Could he see 24 minutes in this one? Yeah, he could. The last time he saw 24 minutes, he put up 33 fantasy points. This has got Campaign's name written all over it. It's also an appealing matchup for Deion Waiters. Super matchup, excess role, 4,000 salary. Give him 25 points, bang, he's done. Steve Adams is out. Enes Kanter didn't start the last game. They went with Nick Collison, but Kanter still put up 26 points. He's priced at 4,700. This is the Nets. He's going against Brook Lopez. Kanter can grab every single offensive rebound that's available. If he went for 16 and 10 in 24 minutes, it's not a shock. He could go for 25 and 10. He could get a million putbacks. I really do like Kanter here. Serge Ibaka is now priced under 6,000. In the last couple of blowouts, Ibaka's minutes haven't dropped, unlike Durant and Westbrook. So I'm not as worried about him losing, especially with Adams out, not worried about him dropping down to 25 minutes or 26 minutes or anything like that. He's been playing a lot of minutes, hasn't been producing in them, but in this matchup, I think that 30 points should be within range for him. I'm just not confident in it. The Nets point guard, Shane Larkin at 3,800. It's appealing. The matchup is good for him as well, but no thanks. Definitely not using Wayne Ellington. And Donald Sloan is now at 4,400. He's just a bad basketball player. It is a nice matchup for him, but what's he been doing? 26-point average across the last five, 23 across the last three. I can use it, but I'm not overly thrilled with it. I think that he plays 25 minutes and doesn't do a huge amount. And when he got those 36 points, it was in 32 minutes. I don't envisage him playing 32 minutes all that often. Brook Lopez at 8,000. Without Steve Adams, the matchup is more appealing for him. Can he go for 40? I reckon he's a pretty decent chance to do it in this one, but I'm not sure I want to spend up the 8,000 when I can get a guy like Brook Lopez or Enes Kanter and get him at under 5 and have a little bit more value there. Thad Young struggling at 6,400. I won't be using him. And Joe Johnson's too expensive at 5,100. I would much prefer him at 44 or 45, and then he would definitely come into more consideration to be used. The other Los Angeles team, the Clippers and the Raptors is the next game. The Raptors are favored by 2. The total is 204.5 points. Jeff Ayers has been signed by the Clippers, if anyone cares. He's not impacting fantasy leagues, so we're not impacting DFS either. We don't need to pay too much attention to him. There's not a massive amount of fantasy value in this game, to be honest. Corey Joseph is minimum salary, but he's been brutally dreadful. Maybe in a tournament, but I'm not expecting anything. Luis Scola, Patrick Patterson, both of those guys are priced nicely. 4,100 for Scola, 36 for Patterson, but their production is so up and down, you can't rely upon that in cash. I can rely upon Jonas Valanciunas in cash, though. He's at 6,400. He put up 34 on the last one. He's averaging 33 across his last five. He's got a range between his last five games of 26.5 up to 36. So that's just bang on cash game value, a really nice cash game center. Kyle Lowry is at 8,900. Don't love the Chris Paul matchup. There aren't many point guards that are high priced that I do really like, though. I think he's a decent chance to at least approach 40 points here. JJ Redick at 5,200. Not a good matchup for him. We know he can get hot, but don't love it here. And I don't mind DeAndre Jordan at 7,900. The matchup is positive for him. He's averaging 31.9 across the last three and doing that pretty consistently. 35 across his last five. You feel like he's a lock for about that 34-point mark. And the minutes will be decent for him. 7,900, you might not reach 5x value, but I think you're pretty safe getting him at 4.5x, that sort of number. James Johnson, Terrence Ross. James Johnson at minimum salary, he's just not doing it for me. I don't think I want to really spend up on him. And 3,800 for Ross, even when he has a decent game, his best score in his last five has been 19.4, so that's nothing all that thrilling there. Chris Paul would have been a great matchup, I thought, here, but he's priced at 10,000. Yes, I know he's averaging 52 across his last three, which is impressive. I'm just not convinced that he gets a big one in here. I do like DeMar DeRozan at 8,600. He's been absolutely on fire, averaging 46 across the last three, put up 47 in the last game. He's rock solid, consistent. He can be used if you don't want to spend that extra 1,500 on James Harden as a big priced shooting guard. You could even go with DeRozan and Harden, to be honest, and be pretty confident in the value you get. Cole Aldrich. He's got a favorable matchup. He's putting up favorable numbers. He's actually averaging 27 points across his last five, which is ridiculous considering he's only getting 19 minutes in that time. He's at 4,400. Do you have the balls to use him as your center? I probably don't, but the numbers all sort of look relatively promising. I don't think I would do it, though, really. Wes Johnson at 3,900 is a tournament play. We know that he can go big. He can go 6, 7x big, like he did in the last game, but more than likely he won't do anything. And same goes with Paul Pierce and Austin Rivers. They're too risky to have any sort of cash value, and they're not really that appealing to me in a tournament. The next game is Boston at Philadelphia. The Celtics are favored by 8.5. The total is 207. Amir Johnson is back after missing that last game for personal reasons. He will be playing. Jay Crowder is probable with an illness. And on the Sixers, we're unlikely to see Nick Stauskas. But we are going to see Jakarl Sampson playing, thank God. And Nerlens Noel will be playing after dealing with a headache and dizziness in the last one. Bobkov at 4,900 looks just really appealing. That's a nice matchup for him. He's been getting consistent minutes and putting up consistent fantasy numbers. I think I like him in cash and in tournaments here. Hollis Thompson at 3,600. He's definitely not sexy. He's definitely not appealing. But the minutes with Stauskas out have been consistent, and you might get 20 points out of him. I'll probably let someone else get the 20 points out of him and not get too excited about using him. As for the Celtics front court guys, with Amir Johnson back, it sort of puts a little bit of a limit on Kelly Olynyk and Jared Sullinger, but they've both been playing so well. Sullinger at 5,600, it's a real positive matchup for him. Olynyk at 5,100, again, a real positive matchup for both those guys. I think that they can put up 25 points each relatively comfortably. Olynyk's averaging 28.5 in 26 minutes across his last five. Sullinger's at 28 points in 23 minutes across his last five. And if they both do that, in those limited roles, that's enough to return that value. So I'm relatively fine with using those guys. I also don't, I do like using Avery Bradley a lot. He's at 5,600. He's in pretty good touch at the moment. 31.7 across his last three, just really consistent numbers and helping out in other areas, getting some assists, getting some steals to go along with his scoring and his threes. On the Sixers side of things, Jahlil Okafor is at 6,500. He's basically a lock for 30 points most nights, and he can go bigger than that. He's at a 35-point outing in the last five. He's a pretty decent matchup against a Celtics team who does allow power forwards to put up nice numbers, or big men to put up nice numbers. Nerlens Noel at 6,400. Yeah, the matchup's good for him. Not sure I'm overly excited about rolling him out there. Same with Jeremy Grant at 4,200. Although Grant's more of a guy that I would throw out in a tournament. 7,200 for Ish Smith. Salary's too high. Matchup's too good. And when I say too good, I mean the opposition talent level is too good defensively. Not using him. Isaiah Thomas at 8,400. That's just too expensive for a guy that's only averaging 34 across the last five. At 8,400, he needs to be pushing 42, 43. And he hasn't approached that in the last five games. So as decent as it is playing the Sixers, they're not a pushover. And I don't really like using him at that sort of excessive salary. I don't mind Isaiah Cannon, despite the fact that he's playing the Celtics. He's priced at under 4,000. He's playing a bigger role. He can get hot and hit threes. He could drop 16 real-life points in this one and have a couple of steals and return value. So he's a guy that definitely has to be looked at and considered when you're building a tournament lineup.
DFS picks of the day.
There's four games on. Let's have a look at some DFS options for tomorrow. Cam Payne at 3,700. This is assuming you think that the Thunder is going to blow out the Nets and he's going to get 20, 23 minutes. He is worth a look in a tournament. Darren Williams at 62 taking on the Rockets, and Kyle Lowry at 8,900 against the Clippers. Shooting guards, Dion Waiters at 4,000, Wes Matthews at 5,200, and Jim Harden at 10,000. Small forwards, Bob Carver's at 49, Trevor Ariza's at 51, and KD's at 10,000, but I don't really love the KD. There's no other big price salary guys in. I probably just shouldn't have put KD in there at all. I don't really like it, although if I'm using him or Westbrook, it's definitely KD that I'm using in this spot. Power forwards, Terrence Jones, 4,700, Jared Sullinger, 56, and there's literally no one that's priced above 7,500 from the power forward position. At center, Enes Kanter, 4,700, Jahlil Okafor, 65, and at center, DeAndre Jordan, high price, $7,900. That rounds out the DFS plays. Good luck in the last day of your head-to-head matchup. Good luck with your DFS lineups. Good luck in your rotisserie leagues. Good luck in your life. Good luck in everything. Follow me on Twitter at @RedRock_Bball and Basketball Monster at BaskMonster for all the late breaking news and updates and access to articles and all that sort of stuff. Kyle should be having a waiver wire article go out in the next day or two, and Matt Smith will be having his schedule analysis article go out probably by the time you're listening to this. So make sure you're checking out all of those. Of course, I have the morning update article that goes out there each day as well. Subscribe to this podcast on iTunes or on YouTube, and if you could leave a review, it would be muchly appreciated. We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.